First of all, it's my pleasure to be moderating this panel. We have three highly esteemed experts in various fields of the the terminology that I'm starting to hear quite a bit now is the pattern and impression evidence area. So our first speaker today is Dr. Busey. Tom Busey is a professor of cognitive science at Indiana University in Bloomington. He has addressed the psychological aspects of latent print identification for the past 5 years with support from NIJ. Much of his current work uses eye-tracking methodologies to determine the features that experts use when individualizing or excluding latent prints. Dr. Busey received his doctorate from the University of Washington.
Thank you. And I guess this is your last of your fourth session today. Somewhat of a relief. So despite the fact that I live in a flyover state in Indiana here, we actually have a fairly strong quantitative group and a very strong School of Informatics and Computer Science. And my colleague Chen Yu is a computer scientist. And we work with John Vanderkolk, who is with the Indiana State Police up in Fort Wayne. And even though I'm in the Department of Psychology, I like to tell people I'm not the kind of psychologist who cares how you feel. I mean, if you tell me how you feel, I'll look interested, but deep inside, I'm not caring. Instead, I'm the kind of psychologist who studies how experts go through and match what can be very partial and degraded latent prints to inked prints collected from a known source. Now, this is a very difficult problem, and computers have made a go at this. But despite what you see on CSI, computers mainly play a role in triage, in finding candidate matches. And almost all of the evidence that's presented in court is done on the basis of a human expert comparing these two and rendering their opinion. Now, there's good reason for this expertise, this superiority of the human visual system. In fact, you've probably proven this expertise yourself over machines many times through these CAPTCHAs. You're familiar with these, where you have to fill them out to prove that you're actually not a computer. And in fact, this was the basis for a recent comic that uses robots as their chief characters. One of the robots has a CAPTCHA for a tattoo, which of course he can't read. So you guys are in on the joke because you're not a computer. You can go through and read this and figure out what it says. And even though this is something that computers are continually getting better at, in fact, my colleague Harry Shirhari here could probably develop algorithms that would read these kinds of CAPTCHAs, by and large, humans have had a remarkable ability to succeed where computers have failed up until now. And the idea behind my research is to try to understand how the human visual system works, understand its elements of expertise, and then try to apply them to machine systems. So human experts outperform current automated systems in many domains, not just in fingerprints. But there are lots of advantages to machines. They have known algorithms, except in the case of APHIS, where they're apparently still proprietary. They provide for standardization. They can be used to provide probabilities of random correspondence. So there, and there, of course, they can be incredibly fast. And so these are advantages that can be used once you develop expertise from humans and try to understand it. You can bring those into the machine world. So to do this, we're proposing to reverse engineer the human visual system, study it, and try to glean its secrets, and then apply those using the kind of language that machines understand. Well, this is not inconceivable because in some sense the human brain can be thought of as a computing device. In fact, your retina, the back of your eye that actually does the light capture and the first steps of seeing, is actually made of the same stuff that your brain is. It's a little piece of brain tissue that was segregated out early on in development and brought out as part of your eye. So your eye itself is a little computing machine. So we want to know what makes your human visual system and your eyes so good. Well, one starting point might just say, what do you use, experts? How do you go about this task? It turns out to be a good starting point, but language is a very poor representation of what can be a very rich perceptual experience. So imagine doing a latent ink comparison over the phone here. So you have this print right here. Your colleague on the other end of the telephone has this print. Imagine trying to describe this in such a way that they can decide whether this matches or not. It's a very difficult process to imagine doing, and it illustrates how poor language is as a means of describing perceptual information, at least complex perceptual information here. another problem is that some processes of perception simply reside below the level of consciousness. We can't change some of our perceptions even though we know that reality differs from our perceptions. So this is a very famous illusion here. I don't know if it's going to work at this distance. What you may find if you stare in the middle here is that these outer ones start moving on you. It can be very disquieting to see this, and you can't not see it happen. You can't tell yourself just because you know it's static that the motion isn't there. So usually our percepts are trustworthy. There are some situations where they're not, which is another reason to study human performance. In addition, experts sometimes report having an aha moment where they just look at these two prints and they know they match. And then they have to go through and document it, of course. But the process of this immediate spark of recognition is way too fast to come from a serial sort of point-by-point comparison. So in order to understand how experts are doing this, we are using eye tracking technology. Here is an example of our eye tracker here. There is one camera on the front here which looks at the eye, and there's another camera up here on the top of the glasses that looks out on the scene. And we end up with two images right here. You have an image of the eye, and we can capture the pupil here and what's known as the corneal reflection. And then we have another camera that tells us where the scene is relative to the head. And there's a very straightforward calibration procedure that allows us to look and see where the eye is relative to the world. So we can see what people are looking at. We can estimate the pupil and the corneal reflection with our software, which tells us where the eye is gazing. And all of this is wrapped up in a software package that's free and open source called Expert Eyes that allows you to go through and collect data. And analyze it. And we have data for over 100 subjects now that we've analyzed, and I'll talk about a subset of that data today. Now, we want controlled studies that allow experts to reveal those regions that they consider most diagnostic. And therefore, we fix the viewing duration of each pair of our prints to about 20 seconds to give the experts just enough time to tell us what they consider to be the most relevant or the most diagnostic. So here's an example movie of our eye tracker at work. Here's the eye moving up here, and here the crosshairs here is our estimate of where they're looking in this gaze. When it jumps there, that's the blink, and that's, of course, not relevant data for us. So you can really get a sense of what features they're relying on when they're going through and doing this particular task. So that was one trial worth of data. Here's another visualization here. The blue is a trace of the overall eye data within the trial, and then the red plus signs that are filling in, those are the actual moment-by-moment fixations. It's kind of actually hard to watch that in real time because you're essentially watching somebody else's eyes, and it's tough to keep up with other people's eyes. So here's another visualization here. The green circles are the fixations, and then the red is the current fixation, and the size of that tells you how long they spend at that location. Even with this visualization, I had to slow it down to half speed to enable you to keep up. So this gives you an idea of how they're going through each location and determining what features they think are most relevant. So our system is fairly accurate. The fovea is about the size of two thumbnails width at arm's length. So if you think about how wide your thumbnails are, that's about where you're acquiring information. That's the region of fairly high acuity of the visual system. The resolution falls off rapidly after that, out in the periphery. And our eye tracking system can resolve eye gaze locations down to a half a thumbnail, or about 0.5 degrees of visual angle. So we're down to the point where we're in the region and below the region where people are requiring their information. And this, in general, for most of our experiments, corresponds to about 1 to 4 ridge widths, depending on the size of the ridges that we display. Now, the first step here, if you're going to try to take data from experts and use it to improve machine systems, is first verify that your experts have some kind of expertise. There hasn't been a lot of work done in eye tracking work with experts, and so this was our sort of first step to make sure these experts really do have this special expertise. So we did our first experiment with 12 experts and 12 novices. Each one did about 35 pairs of images. And it's useful to talk about the behavioral accuracy first because we want to make sure that they're actually doing better than our novices. What we find is that we have three categories of responses. So they can either say, yes, there's a match, no, it's not a match, Or we gave them an option of too soon to tell. We found that when you pushed our experts after only 20 seconds to make a decision, they really were uncomfortable with that. Because for an expert, if you make a wrong decision, it's a career-ending move. So we added this too soon to tell option, and we found that many of our experts are fairly conservative. They're not likely to, after just 20 seconds, to move into this yes category here. So a lot of them are saying too soon to tell. They make very few errors when it comes to misses relative to our novices. And most importantly, they make no erroneous identifications. None of our 12 subjects on any of our 35 images made erroneous identifications, whereas the novices, 25% of the time, it was a true non-match. It should have been an exclusion. They're saying, yes, it's a match. This is a huge difference, and that really drives the performance accuracy difference between the two groups. So the experts are doing much better than the novices. The second question we ask is whether experts as a group are consistent with each other. We'd like to think that there's some kind of implicit standard that the experts are relying on, a set of features that they all agree that are relevant for the task. We could ask, do they tend to visit the same regions or locations? And I want to quantify that just briefly for you by imagining that your eyes shoot out laser beams. And when you were kids, I'm sure you imagined this. You're shooting out laser beams, and where the gaze hits, the print turns a dark red here, or yellow and then red. So this is a way of visualizing where the eye gaze falls. And we can compare the patches from one expert to another expert and one novice to another novice to ask, are the experts more consistent as a group or are the novices more consistent as a group? And it turns out that the experts as a group tend to be much more consistent in terms of the regions that they visit. And at least in this constrained viewing experiment, experts seem to have an implicit set of features that they tend to seek out and tend to all look at. Here's an example of why this is happening. This is kind of a dim slide from this projector, but most of the experts in green here are falling in this region here and also the analogous region on this side, whereas the novices in red are all over the place. Here's another way of viewing what features the experts are relying on. We can use automated software to identify the locations of minutiae, which are marked in green pluses here. And if we look at regions surrounding those of some arbitrary circle size and ask, within each fixation, how many of these minutiae fall inside of it, do the experts tend to look at more minutiae than novices? A lot of the APHIS systems are relying primarily on the locations of minutiae. So you could ask, when experts are doing these latent ink comparisons, do they rely on minutiae? Well, it turns out that when you count the number of minutiae inside a circle of fixed size centered on each fixation, and the size of the circle doesn't matter, it turns out, and ask whether experts or novices have more nearby minutiae, it turns out in these latent prints, there is no difference between the experts and novices in terms of the number of minutiae that they visit. And this suggests that for latent inked comparisons, the minutiae may represent a relatively small part of the available information. Experts might be relying on ridge flow or curvature or level 3 detail or something else when they have a relatively small patch of latent impressions. So this highlights the advantages that humans have over existing computer models. They have the ability, when they don't have a lot of minutiae, to move to other levels of detail and to do that fairly easily and quickly. That's something that the computer system is going to have to, if it can process something like level 3 detail, it has to decide whether it should represent that or minutiae detail in its decision and how to weight those. Okay. What about for clean prints? Well, we used a second set of clean prints, and we found that experts now are much more likely to move their eyes to locations closer to minutiae. So if you give them a large wealth of information, they're likely to move their eyes more to minutiae. And here it's obvious why. With these clean prints, the experts tend to move their eyes to regions near the core, leading from the core, and also the delta. So the experts are in red here, the novices are in blue, and the minutiae are in green. So the novices tend to be sort of all over the place, and the experts tend to be down in these regions here. So, a third analysis that we did was to look to see whether experts move their eyes more quickly to matching locations. So we asked one of our experts, to simply place locations of correspondence on these two prints. And that's what's shown connected by lines here. And then we can imagine that there's a trace starting right here and ending in a fixation right here. And it's the last fixation before they move their eyes to the other side. So then the eyes moved over here looking for a matching corresponding location, which happens to be this green dot right here. Well, we can, and then they sort of wander off having found it as close as they're going to get. So we can ask, how close do subjects get to this matching location? Or, over time, how close are they getting at each point in time to this matching location? Well, it turns out that this graph here illustrates the time, since they move their eyes from the left side to the right side, that's time zero. And the y-axis here is the distance from what is the true matching location, as determined by where they started on the left-hand side, what's the right-hand side matching location. And we find that the experts almost immediately get closer and stay closer to the matching location. Ultimately, they are much closer to the matching location than the novices are. Okay, so experts are better than novices. They are more consistent as a group in terms of the features selected, and they have a tendency to rely on more minutiae when looking at inked prints. But the final question I want to address in the last few minutes is what features they rely on, because minutiae may be only part of the story. At least for latent prints, it doesn't look like experts are using it more than novices. So this is a more complicated analysis here. But basically what we do is we start with the fixations, which are shown in red here, and we'll crop out regions of pixels surrounding each fixation. So here's a little crop of pixels. Here's another little crop of pixels. We can get lots of these. In fact, we get 40,000 total over all of our database here. And then we can what's called dimensionality reduction, which basically illustrates the fundamental building blocks of perception. These are the sort of the alphabet of, in perceptual language, of fingerprints. And the amazing thing is that you can take relatively few basis functions here and reconstruct with fairly high accuracy the original image patches. So here's an original image patch here, and here is the reconstruction of that here. It's a little bit blurry, but it's remarkable the fact that you can take 40,000 image patches and with just 200 basis sets reconstruct any one with fairly high accuracy. It's actually not that unfamiliar or unrelated to something like JPEG compression, where you can see enormous redundancy reductions. So what we'd like to do with this analysis is to figure out what features or combinations of these basis sets are used by experts as they go through and look for correspondences between prints. And this is really the heart of our grant project over the next couple of years, is to identify what combinations of these features are used by experts. You can see that they're already starting to see some complex features like minutiae coming out of these, but you also see lots of categories where it's just ridge flow. And so by looking at the combinations of these features, we can really see which of these distinguish between experts and novices, and ultimately, and I'm going to skip all this in the interest of time, ultimately try to figure out what our features will look like that experts are using. And this is really going to lead to a situation where you can essentially look through the eyes of the experts and use this to filter images so that we can highlight regions in new prints that we think experts might find most diagnostic. So implications for practice here, just to finish up. Machine learning results are directly applicable to computer-based systems like APHIS because we use the same language that they're using. We use machine learning approaches, which are the same kinds of tools that are used in systems like APHIS. Prints filtered by this basis set that I just showed you can assist the identification process, much like we have computer-enhanced mammography examinations now in hospitals. The feature set that I just showed you provides a quantification of factors such as feature rarity, something I think Harry will talk about as well, and it can be combined with likelihood models to provide probabilistic statements, much like we have in DNA evidence now. But first, we're going to need to collect the relevant data from experts and infer an appropriate feature set, and that's really what we're doing in this project. Thank you.